We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
America!
The Nightcap.
Hey, man! Yeah. USA, baby! Woo! That's what America's all about, D! Right here, this is the USA!
Oh, relax! Oh, I'm gonna sit through half. Oh, you gonna throw with me? Little actor boy, you wanna go with the Patriots?
Get in your bed. Get in your bed and go, okay?
Because I'll throw down any day of the week. Get your little man and drive out of my face, okay? Before I go America, all over here!
Nobody can stop the USA.
Yeah.
But right. That's not the
yes.
I am talking about freedom, about choice. America? I don't think you need to worry, because if you want to beat China, you will. If you don't, that's fine. That, my friend, is your victory.
Who do you play for?
Play for the United States of America.
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
Welcome in to the Nightcap. Joe DiBiase with you for the next couple of hours here on WGR. First time I'm going for the flavored coffee creamer. Reese's today. I've also got an Oreo in the fridge, ready to go. Big coffee drinker. I've become a big coffee drinker, I would say, over the past few months. And I'm trying to explore a little bit. So if you got any ideas, like what's a good coffee creamer, let me know, because I was pretty generic, just, you know, your normal coffee creamer. I don't even know, like, what flavor you would call it. Just, like, vanilla? I don't know. But I'm starting to dabble around a little bit. So let me know if you got any suggestions, because I'm going for Reese's right now, and it's pretty good. I'm a sweets guy, so that's right up my alley, so... There was a cannoli one I saw that I might take a shot at. There was a couple of others, but I'm ready to go, and I'm not just ready to go for some football talk here, because I know it's September. It's September 11th, and generally we are all in on football talk by now, and we have been for some time. You know, there's the rare example, like last season when Jeff Skinner was traded for in the middle of August, where we took a break to talk some hockey. But for the most part, this month, last month, and even really next month is going to be a lot of football. Hockey is coming, though, and I'll be the first to admit, I'm a bigger hockey fan than I am a football fan. I, growing up, bigger Sabre fan than I've been Bills fan. Part of that is... me playing hockey at an early age and not really playing football until I was in high school. Part of that is also you get two teams you grow up with, one of which has a couple of insanely good seasons right in the middle of your childhood, and the other team doesn't make the playoffs until you're 20 or 22, however old I was 2 years ago, 22, when the Bills made the playoffs. So, you know, the Sabres, they got there first. They captured my heart early before the Bills did, all the way through. So, I'm pumped for hockey, and a lot of seasons, it's easier to be pumped for hockey because the Bills aren't really as intriguing as they are right now. The Bills aren't often surrounded by the expectations that it sounds like they have right now. Fans, like maybe the media doesn't think that they're going to be all that good. I would say some of the national media, like I listened to Colin Cowherd yesterday, who I don't listen to often, but listening to his show yesterday, like he seems to have come around on Josh Allen and the Bills. And I think a lot of people are starting to do that. I don't think a lot of people are all the way in on, oh, they're going to win the AFC. They're going to win the AFC East. They're going to even make the playoffs. But I would say most people respect what is going on here. They respect the roster that has been built. They respect the way that our coaching staff has gone about it. They respect the way our general manager and the all management has gone about it. They pretty much respect what the Bills have going on. And even though they might not pick them to be a playoff team. The sense I get from listening to a lot of national outlets, I listen to the Dan Lebatard show a lot on ESPN Radio. I listen to Dan Patrick once in a while. Like I said, I listened to Cowherd yesterday. Like, listening to a lot of the national radio guys, the little they've talked about the Bills, they seem at least fairly impressed. So, it's not just here, but it's a little bit nationally, but a lot here. Most of the expectations are here. Bills fans, everybody kind of wants to see some sort of progress this season. Progress from a 6-win team is probably 8, 9, maybe even 10. We're talking about a playoff hunt. We're talking about a real playoff hunt. Not just on the graphic when you're 7-8 at the end of the season and CBS lets you be on the graphic right at the bottom and you got a million tiebreakers and you got a million things you got to do to make it. Like a real playoff hunt. Games at the end of the season that legitimately matter. You win and you're in type of games. That is kind of what the Bills should be this season. And that's typically not the case. I don't know, for me, most seasons for the Bills are, maybe this is the year. Maybe they'll get lucky and they'll be good this year. That's normally what it's been. Get lucky and they'll be good. And this year, something else is kind of surrounding them right now, and I think that has been fueled by a really, really sweet comeback victory against a division rival that you have been compared to all offseason, on the road, nonetheless, in the Jets. Week one, I think, went a long way in fueling what expectations should be for the Bills. And I think that is, like, I don't want to say I'm not juiced up for the Sabres, because me personally, I am juiced up for the Sabres. I usually, right about now, I'm already thinking about them as much as I am the Bills. But it's not happening quite as much this year. And part of that is the Bills, but part of that is, I think, the Sabres too. And hockey's right around the corner. I mean, training camp opens tomorrow for the Sabres. And I talked a little bit about them on the show last night, just a little bit. Ristolainen's still here, and he's going to be at camp, unless he's traded last minute here. He's going to be playing probably in some preseason games. He's going to maybe be playing in the opener. And the preseason games get going pretty quick, too. Training camp opens tomorrow. That's here. Preseason games start on Monday. You will tune into our station at this exact time on Monday night. 5 days away. Less than a week. And you're going to hear either Rick Jenneret or it might be Dan Dunleavy. You're going to hear Sabres play-by-play on our station. Like, it's right there. There's not as much build-up to the hockey season. That's a given. If you've been listening, if you've been paying attention to the teams for a long time, you get that. But the difference in expectations this year, what is it? Because I remember one of the first shows that I did when I took over for the nightcap here was preparing for last season, or maybe even two seasons ago, and asking the question, who is closer to making the playoffs this season? Is it the Bills or is it the Sabres? Because I'm not sure many people had the Bills in the playoffs, but not a lot of people had the Sabres either. The Sabres were kind of, I think, in the position last year that the Bills are in right now. What were the Sabres going into last year? They were second-year head coach. We've got, you know, we got the we made the big trade in the offseason we wanted to make. We wanted to get O'Reilly out of here. We got O'Reilly out of here. We got our key pieces. We've got Dahlin. We've got a nice young fresh face that's really exciting. He's going to be really good. We got our new goaltenders. We got a couple of new defensemen. Like we've made some progress. We've done some stuff, right? And now maybe we don't expect to make the playoffs, but we expect to be contending for the playoffs. Isn't that kind of where the Bills are right now? Maybe some of you out there expect them to make the playoffs. I'm not there yet. I'm certainly not expecting them to make the playoffs. I'm expecting them to be in a real legitimate race. I'm expecting them to be a game or two away at worst. But that's kind of what the Sabres were last year, right? And the Bills were the flip side of that. The Bills were starting over with a rookie quarterback. They had no pieces on offense whatsoever. They were starting Nathan Peterman at quarterback. That's right, a year ago. We were still at Nathan Peterman starting for the Bills. It seems like 5 years ago. It was 1 year ago. You were talking about a rebuilding type of season, even though they had made the playoffs the year before. Expectations very low. This year, the Bills have a much clearer path, don't they? And I think if I were going to compare the two teams right now, and I were going to go to every sports fan here in Buffalo and ask you, who are you more optimistic right now about, the Bills or the Sabres? Now, you could make, I think, some very legitimate arguments that the Sabres are just as close to making the playoffs as the Bills are. I think you could very easily argue that. They've improved their blue line, I think, by leaps and bounds in one offseason. They've added some really good modern-day defensemen like Colin Miller, Brandon Montour, Henry Yokiharu. Pilot's going to be coming back for year two. They've really remade the blue line, finally, after years and years of Tim Murray trying to slap some Band-Aids over the problems, like Josh Georges trading a second-round pick for him and signing Cody Franzen in free agency. And then even Botterill doing kind of the same thing when he got here, trading for Marco Scandella, trading for Nathan Beaulieu, kind of the quick fix. Whereas the more recent additions, they didn't need to be made. They have defensemen. They're not great defensemen. Bogosian, Scandella, Ristolainen, they have defensemen, but those moves, the Montour move, the Yokiharu move, the Colin Miller move, those are not moves to fill in gaps. They are to improve upon what you have right now. And I see a difference in that regard. That makes me optimistic about what they could be this season. Now, they definitely need some center depth. So there's a hole there. But otherwise, Eichel, tremendous. Who knows? Any moment, I feel like this guy could break out even more so than he has. He's been like an 80-point player last year? He didn't get to 90, but he was in the 80s. I think he could legitimately have a 100-point season. A similar jump like Nathan MacKinnon had in Colorado in his fourth season. He had a couple of 50-point seasons, and then boom, explosion. Nathan MacKinnon, just like that, is one of the best players in hockey. Eichel has that in him. Could it happen this year? Sure. Maybe it won't, but it could happen. And they've got a lot of wingers. So, yes, they have a big hole down the middle, but the rest of it is kind of figured out. And there's reason to be optimistic. There isn't, I don't think, enough reason to pick them in this division to be a playoff team, but there's reason to be optimistic. The Bills, you know, the difference there would be they don't really have that one big hole on their roster, kind of like the Sabres do. But the rest of it, like, they're pretty good. There's still question marks. There's not reason to pick them to win their division, for sure, against New England. There really isn't, I don't think, enough reason to pick them to be a legitimate contender in the AFC. I think you top out at there's enough reason to pick the Bills to be a playoff team, and that's about it. There's not enough yet on film, on the field, partly because they haven't had the opportunity yet, but to say this team is going to be making a deep run in the NFL playoffs. You just can't say it yet. You might get to that point somewhere in the season, but you're not there yet. And what's the overall point of this whole thing here? It is thinking about both teams and how both rosters, there's reason to be optimistic about both rosters. There's reason to question both rosters in one way or another. But why would fans overwhelmingly come back and tell you and tell me that they are more optimistic right now about the Bills than they are about the Sabres? And I would have to say there is one reason for that, one big reason for that. And it is the Bills have a very clear direction going forward. McDermott is here. Bean is here. Will it work? Maybe not. Allen should be included in that too. Quarterback, coach, GM. The three pillars of building an NFL franchise. We know who those three guys are. We know they are at least getting this entire season. We know that if things go wrong, it's likely they get another crack at it. Unless things just, you know, go way wrong. Like if they go 2-14, but I don't think that's possible. 2-14, they already won. They'd have to go 1-15 the rest of the way. 1-14, so that's not going to happen. Something drastic like that would have to happen. Because otherwise, these guys, even if they don't make the playoffs, they're getting another crack at it next year. They're a lot more secure, and I think people seem to trust the direction that they're going in a lot more than what's going on with the hockey team right now. Training camp starts tomorrow. Preseason starts Monday. The regular season is about a month away. And as we start to think about this year for the Sabres, and we start to think about the GM, a bad season could be really bad for Jason Botterill. He's been here a couple of years, the same amount of time as Bean. Things have not gone nearly as well. We got a last place finish in there, and you've got a 10-game win streak last year where you still couldn't make the playoffs. There was no action that was done. When you came out of that break, you had holes on your roster, you tried to go with what you had, and it didn't work. I think most people would tell you, maybe part of it's the GM. Maybe part of it is Bean is held in very high regard, I think, among Buffalo sports fans right now. I get that sense. And I think it's right to say that, because I think even I would say that. Bean has done a pretty good job since he got here. All I can do as a 24-year-old Buffalo sports fan who grew up with Tom Donahoe, and it was only Darcy Vergeer for the Sabres, and it was, you know, Marv Levy coming back, and Russ Brandon filling in as GM, and Buddy Nix, and then Doug Whaley. Like, for me, the bar's never been really high for the general managers around here. And I would have to say, in my opinion, Bean's done a pretty good job. Because even though he has yet to really pull in superstar players or elite players at different positions, he has the roster right now completely rebuilt from when he got here. And it's hard to pick a spot on any part of the roster and say they have a hole there. It's hard to pick that spot out. And not only did he do all of that, because like even Doug Whaley, I think, did that to an extent. Like, Doug Whaley brought in talent. But what did Bean do that Whaley didn't? He went out and he went after that quarterback. He was aggressive about it. He did it a year ahead. He planned it. He knew it was going to need to happen. And he made sure that it was going to happen. Now, switch over to the hockey team. This is where I think, right now, I posted a poll about 18 minutes ago. Who's got a better shot this season about being, who's got a better shot at being a contender this season? Sabres or Bills? 85% of you have said Bills so far. I think the biggest reason for that is the direction of the teams. When you flip over to the Sabres, do we really know what direction they are going in? Are they in win now mode? Are they still in a quasi rebuild? They're not, certainly not tanking. Like, what are we doing here? I think all you can expect is you want to hope that they're going to be better, almost in the same place that we all were and that I was 12 months ago, hoping that it's just going to look better. It doesn't even have to look great. I just want it to look better. And that's the exact same place we were 12 months ago. The day before the Sabres training camp started last year, I probably would have told you the same thing. And here we are 12 months later talking about the same thing. They have stalled. And the football team, while, you know, you can disagree with the way they went about things, they got here, they had enough talent that got them to the playoffs, despite the fact that Tyrod Taylor was their quarterback, who I think is pretty good, but your team has to be pretty good, I think, for him to be a playoff team, or for you to be a playoff team. They tore all of that down, and they decided to build it back up. So even though you went backwards first, and then you went forward, and even though you went backwards first, there was never a point where they were stalling. 3 years in with that regime, this is the third season. You can never argue the Bills have ever stalled yet. They did it their way. They were going to do it their way. And so far, so good. It's hard to expect more than what they've done. The moment Bean and McDermott got here, if they told you, hey, we're going to keep some of what's left over here, we're going to try to be competitive in year one, we're going to start to tear it down. Year two, we're going to kind of be all about the rookie quarterback, and we're not going to really worry too much about how good we are. Year three, we're really going to start to build it back up, and then we're really going to try to be good. And if I told you they made the playoffs the first year when they were, you know, still trying to be competitive and just starting to tear things down, if I told you they made the playoffs then in year two, I told you they got the quarterback in the first round, seventh overall. They still managed to win six games, despite the fact that the offense had no talent on it. And then year three, to this point, you started off with a win against a division opponent on the road that you've been compared to a lot. Progress, right? Doesn't that sound like progress? The Bills, I think, deserve some of the credit that they're getting. Maybe not all of it, but I think they deserve some of it. But what are we doing with the Sabres? And as we start to transition to the split in our focus. You know, spring is generally all hockey, and the summer and into the early fall is generally all football. In the coming months, as the regular season really gets going for the Sabres, and then once the season really starts to get into the swing of things, you know, we're going to have to start. That's when fans generally split their focus. That's when I split my focus, right? You got the football team and you got the hockey team going on. And when that happens, are we going to be all in on the Bills and not even really thinking about the Sabres because we don't really know what the Sabres are trying to be? I'm trying to figure out what the Sabres are trying to be. Are they going for the playoffs this year? If they're even close at some point in the midseason, are they going to make a big trade because they think they can be really good this year? Are they going to try to be competing with the Torontos and the Tampas and the Bostons of the world? Because even though I don't think the Bills are quite ready to be competing with some of the top teams in the AFC, they made moves this offseason to show that they're going to try to do it. The football team is a very clear vision. What are we doing with the Sabres here? We are a day away from training camp. I can't say that enough because it still kind of surprises me every time I say it, that it's come up this quick. And Ristolainen is still here, by the way. So I don't know if he means anything to what they are trying to be this season, but there's going to be a little bit of pressure. Maybe not a lot, but there'll be a little bit of pressure on at least Jason Botterill to make this team at least a competitive playoff team this year. At least in a race. And he's already done most of the work that he's going to done for the season. I like some of the moves he's made. The defenseman overhaul, like I said, I full marks from me. I think he did a great job on that in this offseason. I think that was the number one thing that needed to get done, and he got it done. Now, there's still a little bit of cleanup on the back end to do there with Ristolainen and Bogosian and Scandella, but you at least brought the guys in that you needed to bring in. But the rest of it, can you make the rest of it work? Can you find some centers, either within your organization or outside of it? And can you at least get your... Can you get your organization, can you get the expectations for the Sabres to the same point that even the Bills are at right now? Which is, hey, we don't expect to be winning Super Bowls yet, but we're at the point where like now we're ready to be good. And I feel like we've been waiting for the Sabres to be ready to be good for a long time, and they've yet to really capitalize on it. And the Bills, hey, there's a lot of reason to expect that they're about to do it. 803-0550 is the phone number. I'm starting to think some hockey here, as you could probably tell, while also football in my brain too. The running back situation was something that came up late on the afternoon show. I want to dive into that a little bit. A caller called in at about 6 o'clock mentioning LeSean McCoy's stats and how he's looked in Kansas City through 1 week. And to me, it's just I'll explain after the break, but I love where the Bills are right now with their offense. I could love it more, but I love where they are with their offense right now. Part of that is running back. We'll talk some hockey again way later in the show, but I want to dive into the Bills a little bit here on the offense, the running back situation. Devin Singletary, this guy's got to start, right? It's the Nightcap with Jody Biasi. 803-0550 is the phone number. Give me a call in the next 5 minutes. We'll get you right on here on WGR.
They're not babying him. They're not, you know, holding his hand and trying to be this offense, you know, from the 1970s, 1980s either, and just run it into a brick wall 30, 35 times. There was some imaginative stuff. Players were getting open, and they didn't hold Josh Allen back as a runner, too. I mean, that third and two, they run a legit quarterback sweep with him. So it was good to see that Brian Daboll wasn't afraid to take advantage of the things that he does best.
Good stuff from Bleacher Report's Tyler Dunn on the afternoon show earlier today. Find that on demand at WGR550.com. Speaking there on the creativity of Brian Daboll's Bills offense through 1 week. And yeah, it's fair to say that, right? We have yet to really have to say, let Allen throw it. You know, like unleash him. We haven't really had to think that way. EJ, that kind of happened. Where it was like, all right, just let him loose. Let's see what happens. Right? That's what the terminology always is. Let's see what happens. Tyrod, same thing. Let's see what happens. Let him loose. Let him throw it 40 times. Let's just see what happens. And they're doing that with Allen. Part of the reason is I think he's probably more capable of it. That's the biggest reason. But they are they're not holding anything back with him, and I think that's the right way to approach it. 803-0550 is the phone number. I spoke on the running back situation before the break as well. I wanted to get into that a little bit. And I want to take your calls at 803-0550. Let's go first to, let's start with Greg. Greg, you're on the nightcap. What's up?
Hey, Joe. Yeah, I heard you talking. I didn't hear the last caller, but I heard you talking about him wanting, talking about McCoy's stats from this past week. I'm kind of sick of this narrative that, you know, us as Bills fans have gotten used to whenever we've let good players go, such as Marshawn Lynch and whoever, when they go and do well other teams. I mean, I'm going to be honest, when Bean came in and he got rid of Watkins and Darby, I was not, you know, very much in favor of those decisions, but he has a pretty decent track record so far of making the right choices. And, I mean, to be honest, Singletary, I mean, he put in work over this past week. And, I mean, I'm not looking back at McCoy right now. I mean, I wish him luck, mm-hmm. he does, but I think we're in a perfect situation with Gore kind of mentoring Singletary, and if we need Yeldon to come in, you know, for a few snaps, we got him. But I'm pretty optimistic. I don't know why people are looking back at McCoy. We have some really decent running backs right now with Singletary as the front.
I completely agree with that. Greg, I would have to say that when you watched Singletary last week, seeing some of the film on the All-22, like, he was doing exactly what he should have been doing. And that's kind of why I don't really believe in the whole, like, rookie stigma kind of thing when it comes to running backs. That, hey, they need to learn a little bit. They need to get their reps. No, other teams are always throwing these rookies in right away, and they know what to do. Because that position, I mean, you get sometimes as much experience in college that you'll ever get in the NFL. With the NFL becoming such a passing league, sometimes these guys will get more experience in college. Singletary had, like, 400 carries. More than that, actually, maybe. In his college career. So, he's had work. He knows what to do. And I thought watching some of the All-22 film, when he was deciding to jump cut, when he was deciding to hit the hole, when he was deciding to be patient, it all seemed, and he only had a few opportunities to do it, so it's a small sample size, but it seemed like he's ready for more carries because there wasn't one time where I went, well, he made the wrong decision there. Every time it was, he bounced it outside the perfect spot. He cut it inside at the perfect spot. The stutter move that he uses on a safety to get to the edge and get almost a first down on a second and 10 on a pass. Like, I thought he did a tremendous job. And McCoy is going to put up numbers in Kansas City. I'm sure of it. He is going to put up numbers in Kansas City. That offense will inflate any running back stats. Anytime, you can call me and talk about McCoy if you want. You can try to say that we're going to miss him. You could try to say, hey, look how good he's doing in Kansas City. Every single time, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to point at Damian Williams, who was brutal in Miami as a running back. He was on the roster, for the most part, in Miami as a special teamer, as a returner and as a gunner and all that stuff. Under 3 yards a carry, maybe, with the Dolphins. 4 is average, if you didn't know. He gets to Kansas City, and he looks great. It's the offense. You still got to produce, sure, but it's going to inflate your numbers. And I think that's what's going to happen with McCoy. Yeah, he was 10 carries, I think, for 80 yards, something like that. 10 touches for 80 yards. He looked good. He did. But I had seen enough of him last year to know that I wanted to get younger at that position. I wanted to fresh face that position. And they have that right now with Devin Singletary. 803-0550 is the phone number. Let's go to Joe. Joe, you're on the nightcap. How's it going? Oh, Joe, sorry, he just cut off. Let's go to Doug. Doug, you're on the nightcap. How's it going? Doug, you there?
Hello?
Yep, go ahead, man.
Oh, so I was just listening when you talked about, like, the holes. I mean, some of the positions.
Sure.
And, like, you said that, like, none of them really have a hole. You know, one of them I think that's kind of unproven so far is the tight end, because obviously we got the two rookies. And,
Okay, that's fair, because, yeah, you're right. Like, Lee Smith is the only veteran that's there right now, and I never, ever, ever want to see him running routes.
Yeah, I think they only had, like, 2 catches or something
yep.
like that. And another position that thought they looked okay, but I thought it was the wideouts. You know, well, hear me out. I think Cole Beasley looked good. He got those short routes. But I thought John Brown, I don't think he looked that good. He like dropped a bunch of passes. I just don't think that he like performed to what everybody's been talking about.
Who? I'm sorry, I missed the name. Who were we talking about here?
John Brown.
Oh right. I don't know. I was impressed by him a lot, and there were a couple of plays watching some of the All 22 that he looked to be open on that Allen didn't hit him on. Now it was fine because he hit another open guy. I think they were both receptions that Beasley ended up catching, but I thought Brown was great. And if he's going to play like he did on Sunday, then I think you have as good a number one wide receiver here in Buffalo that you've had in a long time. Even though he's small, he gets open, he's fast, he can stretch the field, he can run over the middle of the field, he's versatile, he can play in the slot if you need him to. You don't need him to because Beasley's here, but you could. He's good. He's very good. He's not a superstar, he's not elite, he's a little bit limited by his size, but overall, I think a very good wide receiver, and when you couldn't get Antonio Brown, and you decided you weren't going to go after Odell Beckham, I think John Brown was about as good as you were going to do for a number one receiver, which they didn't have anything close to last year. Nothing close. I mean, Kelvin Benjamin, we were ready to sign him, not only keep him, we were ready to sign him at one point at the beginning of last year. And I'm so glad he played himself out of any consideration for that. And I like the position that they're in right now. You make a good point, though, with tight end. Because at the moment, that is a hole. We'll see if Tyler Kroft gets healthy, if he can really suffice that. I'm not sold on him being able to do that, by the way. There's reason to believe he can. There's reason to believe Tyler Kroft can be a adequate starting tight end in the NFL. They paid him to be that. But there was a reason that he was the third tight end in Cincinnati. Second and third. CJ Uzama. There's a reason that Cincinnati kept two other guys ahead of him. Part of it's money, but part of it is he's okay, but he's not great. He's not super dynamic in the pass game. He's not the best blocker in the world. He's good at both. Okay at both. Decent at both. Whatever you want there. So maybe he can suffice at that position, but I will agree with you for now that that would probably be the team's biggest hole is tight end. You got two rookies and one veteran guy that really you only want to be kept in as a blocker. Thank you for the call. Let's go to Joe. Joe, you're on the Nutcap. What's up, man?
How you doing, Joe? First off, I just wanted to say, you know, great job of taking over the show for Ryan.
Thank you.
A couple months, and you know, I stopped listening for a while, but you've done a bang-up job.
Appreciate that, man.
So thank you for that. And just a quick question. The difference for me, and I just want to know your opinion on it for Josh Allen, like with other quarterbacks that we've had, I find myself trying to sell the quarterback to my friends. Like, hey, no, I think he's doing this good and this good, and nobody really believes in him. But with Allen, I don't really find myself doing that at all.
Why do you think that is?
I don't know. I think he's just the talent. I mean, the only thing he's done that's really angered me is the throw in Detroit that he made over the middle, running over the middle and throwing it like
triple. That was brutal. Yeah.
He did the same thing in the red, white, and blue practice. And I looked at my wife and I'm like, I sure hope he doesn't do that during a game.
He might. I mean, he did it a couple of times last season in the regular season. He did it against Green Bay near the end of the first half, and he did it against the Jets once, I think, right before or right after Sam Darnold did kind of the same thing. So,
yeah.
No, you're right. Like, there's plays like that that are you just can't defend that is still holding me back personally from just crowning him as the quarterback of the Bills for the next 3 years.
Yeah. No, I'm not crowning him by any means. But I think all for him, it's all mental right now, be able to look at the line of scrimmage before the play, have that time to do that, and know what throws to make before he even makes them. You know what I mean? Just get reads and the mental game more than anything.
I know what you mean. Yeah, Joe, thanks for the call, man. I agree, though. The protection, the changing routes before the snap, the being able to even operate a no-huddle offense like he did against the Jets, the knowing when to check it down to guys like Cole Beasley and your running backs, which I thought he did a good job against the Jets. I gave him a very solid grade against the Jets. He was inconsistent at times in the first three quarters, but I thought he was hitting his receivers. I thought he looked confident in knowing where to go with the football. I thought he was making the right decisions with where to go with the football. If he's a little bit more accurate on a couple of passes, then he doesn't throw a couple of picks. The fumbles are inexcusable. I have no defense for him on that, but I thought his lower body mechanics looked good. I thought his accuracy looked pretty good for what he is. And I thought he looked, you know, for not having the vertical, they threw some deep passes, but they didn't throw any bombs, did they? They didn't connect on any. For not connecting on any bombs against the Jets, I thought he did a fairly good job. He was doing a good job, I thought, of hitting the underneath stuff, knowing when to hit the underneath stuff, and some crossing routes over the middle, knowing when to run. No, you're right, because the physical abilities is always there. We've always known that. The only thing naturally he cannot do is throw the ball accurately. His instincts will take him away from that. So that has to then become mental. That has to become mental that, hey, I need to stay clean right here with my mechanics. I need to plant my feet. I need to stay in the pocket. I need to not do this. I need to not throw the ball back over the middle of the field when I'm on the run. You're right. I need to know where the safeties are. I need to know where the linebackers are. All of that stuff, the processing the game, seems to be the biggest question mark with Josh Allen. And I think at the end of the day, I'd rather have those types of question marks for him to work on than the opposite. You know, like with Fitz. He's probably the best example to use for this. There's only so much he can ever do because of his limitations with his arm. Just the way it is. He processes the game great. He's incredibly intelligent. But he can be aggressive at times. But he doesn't have the arm to keep up with it all. And that's why he didn't last as the Bills starting quarterback. Tyrod, a similar situation. Not quite the same. And Allen is the stuff you're talking about there. So I agree. And I thought Sunday was a good first step. Not a perfect first step, but I thought a good first step in showing that he can improve in some of those ways. It's not always going to be perfect with him. I don't think he's going to become Aaron Rodgers or Drew Brees or Tom Brady, where he can just surgically take apart a defense, drive by drive, move the ball at will all the time. I think there's always going to be hiccups in his game, but that does not mean he can't be a franchise quarterback. Because there are a lot of franchise quarterbacks in this league that have hiccups. I think about Cam Newton a lot for Josh Allen, as a lot of people do. He's compared to Cam Newton a lot. And what is Cam Newton? He's a very good quarterback that's had one insanely good season, and he is considered a franchise quarterback by pretty much everybody, including his own team. So if that is the type of future that could be possible for Josh Allen, if not even a little bit, you know, more of a ceiling, because as big an arm Cam Newton has, Allen's bigger, then I think I would sign up for that, and I think that it's realistic to think that he could hit that type of career. But he's not there yet. That's for sure. 803-0550 is the phone number if you want to get in on the action. I'll switch to hockey a little bit in the second hour. Preseason is 5 days away for the Sabres, and Ristolainen is in town. Last we heard, Ralph Kruger said it on Monday that he was going to be here yesterday. So Ristolainen, it seems like, is in town and is ready to go for training camp and might be ready to go for the regular season, even though there were some comments made at the end of last season. There were some comments made to a Finnish newspaper that make it seem like he would maybe prefer not to be here. But I'll talk about this when we come back. Ryan O'Reilly didn't want to be here, and the Sabres paid for it. They didn't have to. And I don't think they have to pay for it now. It's the Nightcap with Joe DiBiase. I'll keep taking your Bills calls, too. Of course, we're going to switch back into football in the second hour. It's the Nightcap with Joe DiBiase here on WGR.
From camp last year, obviously, it was a late start for me, but, you know, that competition has only improved this year, and that helps the team. You know, now I think it's just keeping that going and sustaining that competition and consistency throughout the year.
That is Sam Reinhart. Get used to hearing some of the Sabre players again. They're going to be speaking tomorrow, I believe. And we'll hear from them in the coming weeks as Sabres training camp gets going. Preseason starts on Monday. And that'll be from Pagula Ice Arena at Penn State against the Penguins. We'll have that game here on WGR. That's just 5 days away. And there will be hockey on our station. I'm pumped. I'm ready. I enjoy the preseason, too, more than in the NHL than in anything else. Than in the NFL, of course. You only get six games, which is what? It's less than 10% of your regular season. Plus, in hockey, it's different because you're drafting guys that are going back to juniors or the AHL, and they're playing for the team in the preseason. And if the NFL had a system like that, then maybe we could stomach the preseason a little bit more. You know? Like, what if they had a deal with the NCAA that you can draft a junior or a sophomore in college, and they could be drafted, not sign a contract, they can go to camp. Hey, maybe they can even play in the preseason, but they can go back. If they aren't going to be on the big team, then they can send them back to play for the university. That'd be cool. Like, what if the Dolphins, what if Tua came out this year, and not even Tua, who? Trevor Lawrence. He's not eligible to play in the NFL yet, maybe. Or maybe he is. And the Dolphins pick him, and they decide, all right, he came out 2 years early. We don't think he's quite ready, but we think he's the best quarterback prospect in college football, so we're gonna send him back to Clemson to play for a year. But before we do that, we're going to have him play two preseason games here for the Dolphins. People would tune in to watch Trevor Lawrence in those preseason games, and they would be a lot more interested in it because he's not going to be on the field for them during the regular season. Hockey gives you a little of that on a much lesser scale, of course, because it's hockey. There's a comparison between Ristolainen and O'Reilly that keeps popping up. And it's about their comments made off the ice. It's not even on the ice. It's about their comments made off the ice. Especially O'Reilly. O'Reilly, there was never reason to question how good he was on the ice. He was always really good. And Ristolainen, there's been a big debate for almost the entirety of his career on how good he is. Because he passes the eye test, he doesn't pass the analytics test. And I think he probably falls somewhere in between the end result on both of those things, both of those sides. So I think he's good. I don't think he's great by any means. I don't think he can be great. I think this is what he is. I think he's a good defenseman that can be on your second pair. And if you're a really good team, he's on your third pair. But on a good team, he can be on your second pair. The similarities comes in the off-the-ice comments. Ryan O'Reilly wanted out, and he talked like he wanted out. So they traded him. Ristolainen wanted out, or at least sounds like he's wanted out, right? The Finnish newspaper story, how he sounded at the end of last season. He has sounded like a guy that needs a breath of fresh air, needs to get out of here, needs a new team, see what it's like. That needs to happen, right? In the meantime, he's still here. The mistake I thought they made with O'Reilly was in going about it as though they had to trade him. Going about it as though there was no way he could be on this team when camp opened. And that's part of the reason, I think, that they did not get fair value back. A late first-round pick, What was Tage Thompson on the Blues? The third-ranked prospect for them? The fourth-ranked prospect? He wasn't the one or two. We were talking about getting Robert Thomas, who was pretty good for them last year. So, not their top prospect. A late first. And then we did them a favor by taking Sobotka and Berglund. Taking those salaries back. Why? Why was that deal made? Part of it very well could have been, they thought that they needed to act like this guy can't be here. They thought there was no way he could be back on this team, and that they had to trade him. Because that's what that trade smells like. That's what that trade looks like. And I appreciate when people in charge of sports franchises, head coaches and general managers, learn from mistakes. I think the Bills have done this. Another Bills-Sabres comparison. I thought the Bills have learned from their mistakes with wide receiver, going from big and slow to small and fast, knowing that that's the future of the league, going from a run-oriented offense in their first couple years to, hey, for great start against the Jets, you're airing it out. The Sabres, looks like Bottrell's starting to learn from some of his mistakes. He needs to not be okay with the blue line. He needs it to be a puck-moving blue line, not just a rough-and-tumble physical group of guys in the back that are going to cross-check you in front of the net. He learned from that. And maybe, just maybe, he's going to learn from the O'Reilly trade. And it looks like he has. Because, you know why? Ristolainen's still here. I am positive that he has gotten offers on Rasmus Ristolainen. There's no way he hasn't. That guy's name has been in the rumor market for almost a year. Right? When did we really start talking about trading Ristolainen? Maybe it wasn't a full year. Because it was at some point during last season, I think. We weren't really talking about trading him going into last season, but during the season and exiting the season, that's what kind of started to come about, right? But they haven't done it. And I have to think that the biggest reason for that is they didn't get the value they require. And Jason Botterill, maybe he didn't do this with O'Reilly. I don't know that he didn't do this with O'Reilly, but maybe he didn't do it with O'Reilly. With Ristolainen, sounds like, looks like, he's valuing the value you get back in the trade over him being in the locker room, him being back here in this environment. And I wish the same approach would have been taken with Ryan O'Reilly. If that was the only deal on the table, well, guess what? Even though he doesn't want to be here, and maybe we don't even want him here, he's coming back until we get the deal we think he's worth. That's what they should do with Ristolainen. That's what it looks like and seems like they're doing with Ristolainen. Keep telling teams that. That's what I would do. You keep getting calls on him. Hey, you're not giving us a second-line center. You're not getting him. In one way or another, if we are not landing a second-line center in this trade, you are not getting Rasmus Ristolainen. End of story. Because for me, that's what this would come down to. He is an asset. He is a trade chip that holds value. And even though he has awful analytics, I can't imagine him playing a full season in a lesser role, maybe even one similar to the Jake McCabe plays. You can't tell me he wouldn't help you on the team. Maybe he wouldn't help you as much as he's not going to help you as much as Dahlin, for sure. Maybe he's not going to help you as much as Montour or Colin Miller or even Joki Haru. He might rank fifth on your blue line going into the season. But if he's my fifth defenseman, if Rasmus Ristolainen is my fifth defenseman, I really like my blue line. And I don't need to get rid of him for that. I'd like to. I'd want to. But if what I want's not out there, I'm not rushing it. And I like the fact that the Sabres didn't make a trade this offseason just getting picks and prospects for Ristolainen because maybe that was all that was out there. I don't want that deal. They shouldn't want that deal. Because that's what the O'Reilly deal was, and it looks like one of the worst trades in franchise history. In part because that guy went on, of course, to win the Conn Smythe and the Stanley Cup, but also, you don't have a lot to show for it right now. 803-0550 is the phone number. Get back into football a little bit. I don't want to spend all night on the Sabres. It's September. You know, it's early September still. The Bills won week one against the New York Jets, a team we've been comparing them to all offseason. They won that game on the road. So I do want to get back into football, and we'll do that after the break. So give me a call, 803-0550. We'll get you on at the top of the hour. It's the Nightcap with Joe DiBiase. 1 hour to go here on WGR.
Helping you unwind after a long day of work.
I think he's kind of a boob.
You can't really take the days off as a person. You can't go out there and be a moron. It doesn't work like that.
The Nightcap.
We're eating their food.
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
Welcome back to the Nightcap, as you heard there. That, by the way, that announcer, so wrestling fans out there will recognize my last name, obviously, for Ted DiBiase. I get plenty of tweets and texts about it. And that's the announcer for the WWE, I believe, introducing not Ted DiBiase, but Ted DiBiase Jr., who also wrestled in the WWE and also starred in movies, I think, or at least one. Because there was that little time period where some WWE guys were doing movies. I know John Cena still does it. So that's from that. That's from introducing Ted DiBiase Jr. into the ring. No relation. I get asked that a lot. No relation to the wrestlers that I know of. You know, it's not a very common last name, so there's always a chance that I am related to the wrestler. I'd like to say that I am, but I'm not, that I know of. Anyways, back to the Bills. 803-0550 is the phone number. We did some hockey at the end there. I'm ready to go. I'm excited about the Sabres, but how can you not be more excited about the Bills after their week one win against the Jets? And, you know, you'll hear my thoughts on the Giants from here on out the rest of the week. I think they stink. I think they are the biggest threat to the Miami Dolphins for finishing last place. I really do. I have no respect for Eli Manning right now as a quarterback in the NFL. I think he is arguably the worst starter left in the league. I think their defense is trash. They let Dak Prescott, a glorified game manager, in my opinion, throw for over 400 yards and three quarters on them. Their running back's amazing. They have two players that I would be super excited about if I had them on a good team. Saquon Barkley and Evan Ingram. The tight end. You'll see him on Sunday. You should see him on Sunday. He's probably going to be their number one receiver with all the injuries they have. He looks like a receiver. He's kind of small, actually. He runs like a receiver. He moves like a receiver. He's very quick, very fast. I think maybe he ran in the 4.5s for a 40 time. So he's, I think, a special talent and could break out this season. Like, when I say breakout, I mean, like, right among the elite tight ends. Like, he could be in the Travis Kelce, George Kittle, Zach Ertz type of territory at the end of this year in terms of catches and yardage and touchdowns, all that jazz. And Barkley, as someone that really enjoys watching running backs play, just watching the position, even though I understand and want my team to act on the fact that running backs are very replaceable in the league, and then you should never draft them in the first round. Barkley is so fun to watch. I would have never wanted my team to pick him where they picked him, but he is so fun to watch. I used to enjoy watching Adrian Peterson early in his career because he had that rare combination of size, brutal physicality, and just pure athleticism, pure speed, juking, that ability to cut on a dime despite the fact you're 200 pounds and a ball of muscle. Peterson was a freak talent, and I always loved watching him play. I see a similar thing in Saquon Barkley to another level. He might be the best running back I've ever seen. Now, remember, I'm 24, so I'm not comparing him to Walter Payton. I'm not comparing him to even like Barry Sanders. I'm sure if I watch Barry Sanders play, watching his highlights, as someone who appreciates running back, I can guarantee you I would tell you Barry Sanders is the best running back ever. But I think Barkley's the best I've ever seen. Short sample size, but he's incredible. His ability to make a guy miss in space and then also, you know, leap over the next guy and clear him. He's like, you know, the dunk contest dunks where the guy jumps over someone else. Like, Barkley is doing that in the middle of a National Football League game. He's jumping, like, Allen jumping over a linebacker was unbelievable, right? I feel like Barkley once a game is doing that. Maybe he's not, but it seems like he's doing that, doesn't it? He's unbelievable. But other than those two, man, I just, there's nothing about that Giant team I like. They remind me kind of last year's Bills team on offense, not for the running back and tight end, but at receiver, where they just have nothing. There's just, nothing there. I was so demoralized last year going into the season not just because Nathan Peterman was starting, but because of who the receivers were. Benjamin, Holmes, and Zay Jones. Just demoralizing. And the Giants are in the same spot. Now, theirs is kind of a different story because they've had a lot of injuries and Golden Tate got suspended. But if Sterling Shepard cannot play against the Bills, you might as well have Tre'Davious White sit out. Because if it's Benny Fowler and Cody Latimer, we had Jordan Renan of ESPN covers the Giants on yesterday on the station, and he said a stat that was amazing to me, that they have their top three receivers have all been in the league for more than 2 years, and or maybe more than 3 years, and they have not combined for 1,000 career receiving yards. They just don't do anything. So Tre'Davious White might want to sit out because I don't think you need him on Sunday. He'll play, though. And I'm sure whoever he covers will do nothing. Because if that guy is shutting down DeAndre Hopkins and Robbie Anderson's even the name I want here, but you know what I mean. He's shutting down some of the top receivers in the league. Then these scrubs, quote-unquote scrubs. I mean, why did I say quote-unquote? I'm the one saying it. These guys that Tre'Davious White's going to be playing on Sunday, I don't think he's going to break a sweat. So for more on the Bills and their upcoming matchup with the Giants, as well as a little bit of a fantasy spin on it, because if you heard me yesterday, and I'll talk about this a little bit in a few minutes, the Bills are getting more and more interesting fantasy-wise. They had a lot of options. They had a lot of questions fantasy-wise. Now they might have some legitimate guys that fantasy owners should be ready to start. For that, and also the roster as a whole, Field Yates of ESPN, who I think is a really good listen, been trying to get him on the afternoon show for a little bit. I think we're going to do that in the coming weeks. He actually joined One Bills Live earlier today. Some good stuff from Field. Here he is with John Murphy and Steve Tasker.
John Murphy, Steve Tasker, welcome back to our Seneca studio, hour number two. We're going to hear from John Brown coming up maybe later this hour once practice ends. We'll hear from Josh Allen and Tremaine Edmonds as practice comes to a close today, the first big Wednesday of the practice week. But joining us on the line right now, and he'll be with us every Wednesday throughout the rest of the regular season, happy to have him, NFL insider for ESPN, the host of ESPN's The Fantasy Show, the host of the Fantasy Football Podcast on ESPN. Field Yates joins us. Hello, Field. John Murphy, Steve Tasker here in Buffalo. Thank you for being with us. We appreciate it.
Hey, guys. I appreciate you having me on. Looking forward to talking to you throughout the season.
Yeah, looking forward to it as well. The Bills go up against a Giants team that struggled, especially in the back end of the defense against Dallas. But as I said to Steve first hour, Field, it's only 1 week. I'm reluctant to say that's who the Giants are. What's your take on that?
Well, you know, I think the Giants came into this season with somewhat of like, you know, it was an interesting offseason, to say the least. Let's start there with the New York Giants, is that of all the things that the Giants did this past offseason, many of them did not necessarily play out well in the court of public opinion, which you can decide whether that matters or not, right? Yeah. I mean, ultimately, the wins and losses are what dictates how an offseason is viewed when it matters, which is after the fact. But the Giants came in with somewhat moderate expectations this year. You know, they certainly feel as though they can be better than most believe they could have been, but Week one was, you know, an unfortunate way for the Giants to get things going. Here's the reality for the Giants is that they are going to have to find a way to run their offense through Saquon Barkley while also not falling that far behind. And, you know, on Sunday it got way out of reach, and not only did they not run their offense through Saquon Barkley, who had just 15 total carries, but they did not come anywhere close to staying within breathing distance of the Dallas Cowboys. It was a romping. It was a game that was about as close as the score would indicate.
Yeah, and that's really the question. Is there anybody, and you're the fantasy guy, is there anybody on the Giants besides Saquon Barkley that even gives you a second look?
Yeah, for right now, no, other than Saquon Barkley and Evan Ingram. Obviously, those two players are tremendous in their respective spots. You know, I mentioned how Saquon Barkley had just 15 total touches, and yet he had 120 rushing yards plus his passing game output. So the guy is just tremendous every single time he touches the football. I think he's the best running back in the league. Evan Ingram had, I think, 12 targets last week, and that number could go up even more this week as the team is dealing with Sterling Shepard being in the concussion protocol. Shepard, such a big part of what they can do offensively week to week with so few other wide receivers on their roster right now that really move the needle. So for now, I think you should plan on it being the Evan Ingram and also Saquon Barkley show on Sunday when these two teams square off.
And I know John just said that they, you know, we're 1 week into a long season and we don't know anything about anything yet, but we can overreact. So let's talk about the great overreactions in the fantasy world on week one. Who do you think all of a sudden came from nowhere and may be a fantasy steal, and who do you think you thought was going to be a fantasy home run might turn out to be not so great?
Well, I don't know about – so here's what I would say is a couple of players that came out of nowhere. It depends on what you sort of define that way, because, like, Terry McLaurin generated a bunch of interest in Washington this preseason as a guy that's got a chance to be a real stud for them. The question was, all right, how often or how frequently do we see a player emerge seemingly out of nowhere, the third-round pick at wide receiver? There were some question marks about how much he would be effective in his NFL debut. He was rock solid, though. He played nearly 93% of the offensive snaps for the Redskins, had five catches, 125 yards, and a touchdown. He'd be a guy that I would say has emerged. Now, guys like Hollywood Brown, also obviously often for the Ravens, he played just 14 snaps. So that was one of those games that he's got a chance to grow into a role more, but Terry McLaurin is already an every-down wide receiver for the Redskins. In terms of players that you're a little bit nervous about after their first week, I would say it probably starts with, you know, I think the most questions would be surrounding Todd Gurley. And not that Todd Gurley did not play well in week one, because he did. He had 97 rushing yards in the team's season opener. But we saw Malcolm Brown score two touchdowns and got basically all the goal line work. So, you know, the beauty of Todd Gurley was that, hey, even if he's only getting 15 carries a game, it's a Sean McVay offense. He's probably still going to get, you know, probably two goal line or goal to go carries each Sunday. That wasn't the case this past week. So not benching him, not, you know, trying to cut bait. More just like, hey, you know, you drafted Todd Gurley in previous years for him to be the MVP of fantasy football. I'm not sure that's going to be the case this year.
Talk to us a little bit about Devin Singletary. He kind of emerged a little bit out of nowhere for the Buffalo Bills. He came out, had four carries for 70 yards. And it looks like Buffalo with Frank Gore, T.J. Yeldon, and Singletary, they're going to do it by committee. I know that really doesn't help a lot of fantasy teams, and it kind of people shy away from those kind of guys. Is that correct?
Yeah, I'd say so, is that generally speaking, when you're, you know, playing a fantasy football, what you're looking for is what we would call a workhorse back. And, you know, I got to tell you guys, he looked like a workhorse to Devin Singletary from like the middle of the second quarter on. And this past weekend, and I'm sure we'll get into it a little bit, but like this past Sunday's game was just unique in a lot of ways, right? For the Bills, like it was 20 minutes of ugly sort of, you know, just almost burn the tape type of football. And then it turned around and it was a reflection of what I think we're going to see this year. But I thought personally, and this was not, and I'm not questioning the decision otherwise, I just, this is my guess would have been that Frank Gore would have played more out of the gates for the Bills. Now, it might have been that they fell behind early, obviously down 8-0 after the touchdown plus the safety, that maybe it was more of a game script thing. But Devin Singletary, not only was he playing a lot, but he was playing effectively. Love the way that he ran a couple of chunk runs, obviously a factor in the passing game, which if you go back and look at his last season at Florida Atlantic, wasn't a huge part of what they did in the passing game. Part of it was just they were running the football so effectively with him. But, yeah, I think there's something to be said for what Devin Singletary accomplished in week one. There's a lot of encouragement if you had either drafted him or, you know, maybe more or less likely are looking for him on the waiver wire this week.
Field Yates joins us, ESPN NFL Insider, host of ESPN's The Fantasy Show. You said something a minute ago I want to kind of dive into, Field, if you would. You mentioned how the way the Bills finished the game offensively, finally moving the ball, you thought that was, I guess, more of what you'll see the rest of the season. What did you see, and how do you expect that will continue?
Yeah, well, here's what I'd say is, you know, I think you guys probably know this. I was pretty optimistic about what the Bills were doing this past offseason, and understanding that, you know, things happen, right? I mean, things can go differently than you expect them to. I mean, we've got a variety of people who are, you know, players that, you know, week one injuries that change the outlook for things going forward, right? So it's a, you know, for the Bills, so based off what I thought was going to happen, I thought the Bills performed well in the second half. And what I saw was, first of all, a refined Josh Allen. Not perfect, obviously, but there's certainly a lot of encouraging signs from him. Beyond that, John Brown was every bit as advertised. And it wasn't just the vertical stuff that people were sort of hoping for from John Brown, but it was sort of just the volume, right? 10 targets, 7 catches, 123 yards, good in competitive catch situations, good after the catch. So I thought the you know, the passing game took off in a way that I didn't see it that frequently take off last year. So I was encouraged by what we saw out of that entire Bills offense from basically like midway through the second quarter on.
Did the 60% pass-to-run ratio surprise you?
No, not really, because of how the game was going. It was, obviously, an 8-0 game early and sort of stuck in the mud game type early for the Bills offense. But you kind of had to throw to catch up. And then in close games in the fourth quarter, not, that's big of a surprise. So I wasn't totally stunned by how it all played out. And I thought that it was, pretty, that would be what I would expect given how the game began. Sort of how they just, in the first half, it was more of a punt fest than it was anything else.
Field Yates joins us from ESPN. Let's talk about Buffalo's opponents a little bit this week, Field, if we can. The New York Giants, who I was thinking the other day how they're kind of in a spot the Bills were a year ago as far as receiving targets, lack of offensive firepower. Golden Tate out first four games, and now Sterling Shepard's in concussion protocol. They might not have anywhere to go with the football this week and maybe for a couple more weeks, huh?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. It's going to be, I saw today they're re-signing T.J. Jones, formerly with the team. And, I don't want to be, I'm not trying to be sort of unkind to T.J., but, that sort of tells you where they're at, right? I mean, when you're turning to players of that caliber at this time of the year because you might need them to play right away because you've got Sterling Shepard banged up, Darius Slayton, their fifth-round pick, who's dealing with a hamstring issue. You've got Golden Tate, concussed right now. I'm sorry, he's suspended right now, I should say. There are so many players right now that are prominent parts of this Giants offense that aren't necessarily available. It's going to be a grinded out 4 weeks for the Giants. This is one of those years where this whole season they're going to have to sort of figure it out.
What did you see from their defense? It looked like they just didn't communicate. It was more mental mistakes, I guess I'm saying, than it was physical for the Giants in their defense, correct?
Yeah, I mean, it was. I'd say probably both, to be honest with you, though. There certainly were some mental and communication errors, but I think just overmatched personnel wise. In the back end, they have a player in Janoris Jenkins, a very capable cover corner, but not a lot of other guys that sort of scare you in the way that if you're facing the Bills, you do your best to find Tre'Davious White and throw it somewhere else, right? That's just not something that the Giants bring pretty consistently with their secondary and their personnel there. But I do think that the Giants, they've got some girth up front, not particularly potent in terms of pure edge rushers. Defensively, again, it's going to be another year for them where the personnel needs a lot of work. I know they made some investments in the first round, and they feel good about DeAndre Baker, a cornerback, eventually becoming a really good player. But for right now, I think this is pretty much it's a defense I think the Bills can do some damage against, what I would say, on Sunday.
Field, I got one more Giants question for you, and that's about the quarterback, Eli Manning, who – I've watched most of the Cowboys-Giants game. I thought he threw it well. I thought he played well, which has implications for this Sunday and for fantasy players, right?
Yeah, I'd say so. I mean, listen, I think that I don't want to be unkind on the Giants stuff. But
you said that twice now.
Yeah, I know. But right now, really, it's for the Giants, it's a two-man band fantasy-wise. It is Evan Engram, it's Saquon Barkley, two outstanding players in their respective positions. But it's besides that, guys, sort of the fantasy implications are a little bit more you're sort of grasping for straws, right?
Yep.
When Golden Tate returns, it's different. But for right now, those are the two names to know.
How good is Evan Engram at the tight end spot?
Yeah, he's outstanding. He's awesome. And he's kind of a big wide receiver. I mean, not that he's not a tight end, but in terms of if you saw him, you might think he's just a big wide receiver and not necessarily a tight end because he's so athletic and looks. I mean, a freak. He is, he ran a 4.44 at the combine a few years ago. A guy who's going to be soon one of the highest paid tight ends in the NFL once he's eligible for an extension. He obviously saw a ton of volume last week, and I would expect him to see the same thing this week, guys. Doesn't really have a limitation in terms of his, I would say passing route or his route running tree. He's a guy that he's a mismatch. I think that when Sean McDermott and Leslie Frazier and the rest of the Bills defensive staff are building their game plan, when they built it yesterday, my guess is that, a lot of it was probably how do we stop 26 and how do we stop 88?
Yep. We're with Field Yates. He is host of ESPN's The Fantasy Show, host of Fantasy Football, a fantasy-focused football podcast. We got a couple of questions tweeted in by folks who have fantasy questions. Field, let me throw these at you from UNCJ. Flex position, Alshon Jeffrey, Nick Chubb, or Jarvis Landry?
Wow, great options to have right there. I'd love to have the ability to sit Nick Chubb, but I certainly wouldn't do that. If you're contemplating sitting him, you got a great roster. So I would go with Nick Chubb as my flex spot.
Here's one from Bodot. What's a fair amount of time to hang on to a player at the start of the season?
I'd say at least 4 weeks for somebody you drafted in the first 3 to 4 rounds, provided there's no injury there. Other players, I mean, I've already cut players from my roster after 1 week, but those are players that I had on the back end of my roster that I wasn't anticipating being starters for me.
Yeah, this is another one. You mentioned the Rams and their running back, who Todd Gurley, but they've also got Malcolm Brown. What circumstances should you start running back Malcolm Brown?
Yeah, it has to be a very deep league. If you look closely, and 11 snaps last week, or maybe it was 15 snaps last week for Malcolm Brown. So just because a guy performs really well, like, you know, logic tells you that if a guy, you know, it's almost like if you saw an MLB player had 6 home runs in 6 games, you'd say to yourself, like, there's no way he's going to hit the 7, 8, 9, 10 in the next 4 games, right? Like, logic just tells you that it's very hard to hit a home run every single game. And Malcolm Brown kind of had the perfect start to his season in terms of snaps played and the amount he got out of it.
A tweet from Kenneth, a fantasy question. Is Greg Olsen likely to play Thursday night for Carolina? Regardless, can Ian Thomas see significant action and make an impact? What do you think?
Yeah, I think so. I keep my eyes on Ian Thomas because Greg Olsen is a very he's a question mark right now. But Thomas, great athlete, guy who got drafted out of Indiana last year, didn't have a lot of experience playing football in college. But Olsen, Olsen sounds like he's got a chance. Here's the good news is that if you are considering Greg Olsen and you either have Ian Thomas now or he is available on the waiver wire, you just wait until tomorrow night at about 6:50 Eastern time when the game begins.
Yeah.
Because it's not, it's one thing when it's a Sunday night game and you're waiting on, hey, is he going to play or is he not going to play? Because if he isn't, my replacement might be during that 1 o'clock game. If you're, the 4 o'clock games are ideal for that reason. So I keep an eye on that one again around 6:50 Eastern time tomorrow.
Okay, we've got one more question. Last one from our listeners about a flex player, and it's PPR scoring. So who do you play in your flex position for PPR scoring? Is it Singletary, Lindsey, Godwin, or Westbrook?
Singletary, Lindsey, Godwin, or Westbrook. So it's PPR scoring, which is why I would go with Chris Godwin. Points per reception. So typically you skew in favor of wide receivers in that regard. So I would go with Chris Godwin. God, it was a tough start for the Bucs in week 1, but Godwin did find the end zone. And, I think he has a chance to be a 90-catch player this year if they get on track. And I know that might not feel likely after week 1, but I remind people of what happened in week 1 of last year. Things like Ryan Fitzpatrick throwing for 400 yards and crazy other weird goings-on that result from a tiny sample size.
Yeah, and that gets to the point I want to ask you here, Field, and that's about somebody like Sammy Watkins. Huge game. And now, of course, we know the Tyreek Hill news, but can you count on Sammy Watkins to be that guy? I mean, should people have him in their league or maybe are looking to add somebody? Is he a guy you want to jump on now?
Yeah, you can count on Sammy Watkins in a major way. Obviously, very familiar to those in Buffalo, and I know that his tenure in Buffalo did not necessarily go as planned. But, I mean, any Bills fan who can recall that color rush game against the Jets, I believe it was the week before Christmas in 2015, maybe.
Okay.
But it was the game that the Bills were wearing the bright red jerseys, the Jets were wearing the bright green jerseys, and Sammy Watkins made Darrell Revis look like, and this was still not, this is Darrell Revis, like almost prime Darrell Revis, made him look like a player that did not belong in the field that night. So Sammy Watkins got plenty of natural ability. Patrick Mahomes, obviously, an incredible quarterback. So along both of those lines, that's why you could still have confidence in Sammy Watkins as a player, especially with Tyreek Hill out for what we think could be somewhere between 4 and 6 weeks.
With Tyreek Hill out, does that change your opinion of a freshly acquired LeSean McCoy for the Chiefs as well? Same offense as Sammy Watkins, a lot of options, and the MVP throwing it around. Does LeSean McCoy evolve into something more than just an afterthought in that team?
I don't know about an afterthought. I should say I think he does evolve into more than that. I think, you guys know LeSean well, having spent the past few years around him. There were moments last year where it looked sort of toast. But at the same time, like, I think everybody would tell you that, it was a growing offense, right? The offensive line, which we know was an area that they needed to improve, given how many players the Bills drafted this offseason and invested in free agency and trades, et cetera. So it was not necessarily the circumstances to set up success for LeSean McCoy. Looked much better in his first game with the Chiefs. Had 81 rushing yards on just 10 carries.
Hey, Phil, I want to ask you about Antonio Brown, and I guess a two-pronged question. Obviously, you keep close eye on the Patriots up there in Foxborough. I'm sure Antonio Brown was a popular and very coveted fantasy pick as well. But beyond that, where does this go, and where do they go from here, I guess, short-term, the Patriots, Antonio Brown, and the civil lawsuit that was filed today? How do you think this shakes out?
Well, the extreme short-term is that he's practicing right now as the team is out there for their Wednesday workout. You know, here's what I would say, guys. So I've had this conversation a bunch this morning with people. Is, you know, sort of where do the Patriots stand on this? What is the responsibility they have? And, you know, I think we've seen the league kind of, I don't want to suggest, but sort of the protocol has become for teams in some of these cases is, okay, listen, you need to let the legal process run its course. You need to let us investigate. Now, you can do your own due diligence, that's for sure. And if you find something that you know, prompts you to make a move, then that is your prerogative. At the same time, you know, we need to, you know, it is, we are going to do our research here. And I'm not saying that they're sort of taking this out of the hands of the Patriots, but there's a limit on really any team, whether it's the Patriots, whether it's, you know, any team that's involved with the situation that's anywhere close to this. I think the team is sort of operating under the idea that, like, here's our plan for now. But that could change in a moment's notice. And the plan for right now is that Antonio Brown is going to practice. And, you know, in terms of playing on Sunday against the Dolphins, we'll see. Now, if he doesn't play, it might be tied to this incident. It also might be tied to the fact that he will have been with the team for a grand total of 5 days before the game begins.
And it makes a difference, doesn't it, that it's a civil matter and not a criminal matter. That would be a totally different situation, wouldn't it?
It does, yeah. So there's a lot of tentacles to this. And, again, it's not – I'm not trying to cast judgments. Certainly, you know, that's not sort of the spirit of what we're trying to talk about right now. I think it's for practical matters right now. I think that Antonio Brown will continue to be on the field for the Patriots until further notice.
Okay. Thanks, Field.
Good stuff, guys. Thank you.
There he is. Good stuff from him. I enjoy listening to him on the Fantasy Football or the Fantasy Focus podcast for ESPN. He does it with Matthew Berry as well as Mike Clay, who's been on the station a number of times as well. I want to take a timeout here because, well, I was going to take a timeout here anyway, but in the next segment, if you haven't been keeping up with some of the news and sports in the last hour and a half, there's a major, major story in horse racing. Like, it goes beyond horse racing. You know what I mean? Like, it's the type of story that even, like, the casual sports fan will be interested in. I mean, cheating, allegations the New York Times are making, Triple Crown wins affected, money affected. Big story that was just come out. I'll tell you what that is after the break, and we'll continue on with the Bills. I've got a thought on Robert Foster when we come back and his place in this Bills offense right now, because I did not notice him once on Sunday. So I want to talk about Foster for a little bit as well. 803-0550 for your calls. It's a nightcap with Joe DiBiase here on WGR. All right, we got about 20 minutes left here on the nightcap before we get to pit reporters for you NASCAR fans, so stay tuned. There is, speaking of racing, that was not on purpose. Speaking of racing, the New York Times dropping a bombshell on horse racing. So, they are reporting, big story, just read through it in the past half hour. Remember Justify? Remember the horse Justify? Last year won the Triple Crown. Not American Pharoah, who was the first to do it in like 30, 40 years, whatever it was, back in, I think, 2015. But last year, Justify, 2018, wins the Triple Crown. That horse, according to the New York Times, in a big story that they just dropped, had tested positive for, this is apparently possible in horse racing. I thought that anyway, but it's the first time I've heard of it. Justify tested positive for a performance-enhanced drug weeks before the Kentucky Derby, which is the first of the Triple Crown races. And from this story, what it says is essentially that the owner and race officials covered it up, which, I mean, When you've got the leaders of a sport covering stuff up like that, that's when you know it's a real big deal, I think. It's essentially rigged in that. It's very close to rigged in that sense, I think. So this horse, according to the story, tested positive, and the drug is a performance-enhancing drug, and it says especially for the amount that was found in the horse in Justify. And that if rules had been followed that were normally followed, then the horse would not have been allowed to race in the Kentucky Derby, therefore not allowing it to be able to complete the Triple Crown, which it did. Think of all the money affected. Think about all of it. The gambling money on it. The, you know, even like the fun little parties you get together with, or raffles or Kentucky Derby parties. All like the money there affected. The prize money, of course, that's affected. How about the $60 million that the owner sold Justify's breeding rights for? So much money affected. I'd have to assume that if this is true, which I have no reason to believe it's not at this point, that there will be lawsuits. And this is maybe, I don't know how big, though, this is going to be a story, though. Like, how much will, that's about as big a story as horse racing, I think, can get. Remember, it was a big story this past Kentucky Derby about the review, the instant replay in the Kentucky Derby that changed the winner. And that was a pretty big story. That was a pretty big deal. That was horse racing feeling like real sports. We had a replay debate. Well, now it's going to feel like real sports, I think, a lot too, because now we have essentially cheating, not only cheating allegations, but a cover-up. You have a cover-up. And, man, that's brutal. You can't be covering up, obviously. I mean, that's the obvious part of it. But it's so interesting that this happens. Like, are there going to be, can you vacate wins in horse racing? I'd imagine. Maybe. I don't know. We'll see what happens. But, man, if you haven't read it, I just retweeted it on my Twitter at SneakyJoeWGR. You can find it there. Allegations against the horse, just not against the horse, obviously. The horse didn't decide to take the drugs, I don't think. The performance-enhancing drugs, but they would have been the owners. But tested positive weeks before the Kentucky Derby last year, and it was covered up by officials. Damn. 803-0550 is the phone number. I said I had a thought on Robert Foster. I do. I want to get to that before we get out of here, so I'll take a break now. Last call in the nightcap after this. 803-0550 is the phone number. We'll get you on before the end of the show if you want to call in the next 5 minutes. The nightcap with Joe DiBiase here on WGR. Last call on the nightcap. Joe DiBiase here on WGR. We got about 5 minutes left here. Got into that Justify story that the New York Times released in the last little bit here. Tonight. I'll get to the Robert Foster thought I had tomorrow night. I got a full show, or I got an hour show tomorrow before Thursday Night Football. I want to get through some calls here, though, before we get out of here. Let's start. Let's just get right through it. Let's go through to Jack. Jack, you're on the nightcap. What's up?
No, I was just wondering, you know, as I was listening to the whole thing about the whole Justified story, it kind of brought into, are there any New England ties to this, or Kraft to this story?
It would not. I get where you're coming from. But I don't believe so. I know that there's a horse named Gronkowski. I know that Tom Brady goes to the Kentucky Derby, but I'm not that I know of, but I know where you're coming from. That's funny. Let's go to Buzz. Buzz, you're on the nightcap. What's up?
What's up, Joe? How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good, good. I've been following horses for 40 years, and this is not something new, actually. Like, Lasix is a big deal. Like, all kinds of doping goes on with these horses. And but I will say this: the last caller tying it to the New England Patriots,
mm-hmm.
that was genius. what I really want to talk about, though, is real quick.
Go ahead.
The Bills are going to match up really well with Ingram and with Barkley. They're built to match up with tight ends. And when you talk about Tre'Davious White, it might as well just take the day off. He's actually going to be probably covering the tight end, which he used to do with at Gronk. He did. Gronk before. And or Barkley, if Barkley is flashed out, you know, is flexed out, he'll be on that. The Bills are going to roll. Bet it. Later.
Yeah. Thanks, Buzz. Thanks for the call, man. You know, you're right. Like, Trey White, you wouldn't think of him matching up against tight ends because of his size, but I did think he did a pretty good job against Gronkowski, so I'll be interested to see if they want to use him against Ingram. I think he could do it, but I'm not sure you'd want to have him shadow Ingram because the size, I don't know if you want him covering him all day, you know what I mean? But yeah, I don't disagree. When you've only got two great players that you need to focus on, then I think that makes it a lot easier as a defense, and we already know the Bills' defense has looked great for at least two seasons here. So I am not thinking the Giants are going to score many points on Sunday. And as far as the horse racing thing, part of it, I guess that's not surprising, super surprising to me. I think about boxing for that. When you have so much power in, I guess it wouldn't be the fighters in this example, because it's not the horses, but like the owners and the trainers, and when they have enough power, I think that's when doping and cheating can really start to thrive, and that's what happens in boxing at the very least. Let's go to Pete. Pete, your last call in the nightcap. What's up, man?
Thanks, Joe. Love the show.
Thanks, man.
So I wanted to improve the Bills' left offensive tackle. I know you haven't.
Deion Dawkins?
Yes, sir. I want him on his feet. I don't want him laying on the ground. You check that play in the fourth quarter where he pulls and they have a quarterback keeper to the left side. This guy's laying flat on the ground without touching anyone.
Are you talking about the quarterback keeper where they got the first down?
Yes, yes. I want you to focus on this guy and improve him, because the more he improves, the left tackle, offensive tackle, the better our passing game's going to be. And this guy can improve by planting his feet and making that first punch. It's a two-handed punch, and they send the guy up.
Hey, Pete, thanks for the call, man. Like, I get what you're saying, but I don't see it the same way. I get what you're saying in that your left tackle, I think you need improvement out of Deion Dawkins as a whole, but I thought he was great on Sunday. I thought the offensive line as a whole was great, and there was nothing Dawkins did that I saw. I know the play you're talking about. I think he was on a designed block to kind of extend out to the linebacker, so I think he still did his job on that play, if I'm trying to remember it right off the top of my head. I had no problems with Deion Dawkins on Sunday. I think he definitely needed to improve, but as far as who the left tackle is right now, I have no question about who that is for the Bills, at least for this year. I don't have a question at all about it. All right, thank you for the calls, and I got to get out of here. NASCAR fans, stay tuned. Pit Reporter's on the way next. I'll be back with you tomorrow night at 7 o'clock for an hour before we will carry you Panthers, Buccaneers, Thursday night football. I'll be on the air for an hour before that. Have a good night. This has been the Nightcap with Jody Biasi here on WGR.